It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
Good morning and welcome to Lightning Radio. The Lightning is on the streets, it's in your mailboxes, and as we do every Thursday morning, it is on your radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Bill Moss, welcome back to the studio via Skype this morning.
Happy to be back here on Lightning Thursday with the news for the community.
That's right. No one does it like the Lightning, so let's hit right on it. And on the front page of this week's Lightning, the lead story, taxpayer-supported Shop and Dine campaign moved to holiday season. This is something they were going to do earlier when the pandemic hit, but they've decided to move it now, huh, Bill?
Well, yeah, that's the story they're telling, that they decided to postpone it for a while. Reasons are a little unclear, seemingly, but we assigned reporter Andrew Dundas, did a terrific job on this, talked to a dozen people about this story. We did the research because we became curious and actually had a few comments about whatever happened to this Shop and Dine program campaign that the Chamber of Commerce talked about rolling out. They talked about it in public probably five or six times because they went to the Henderson County Board of Commissioners, City of Hendersonville, Town of Laurel Park, Flat Rock, Fletcher. I think they pitched Mills River. That was the one that didn't contribute. But all of those elected boards appropriated amounts ranging from $5,000 to $1,000 for the Shop and Dine program, which was pitched by the chamber president, Mr. Williford, as a three-month focus from June through late September, which they would then evaluate and consider extending into the holiday season. It is not, except for a little bit of social media and a contest that encourages people to shop and dine and post that they shop and dine and makes them eligible for some kind of prizes. It doesn't seem that visible. And they don't say that they've really rolled it out and spent money on marketing and the campaign so far. Andrew interviews mayors and council members and downtown development folks and restaurants and shops and kind of gets their reaction. And most say, yeah, we understand that. What Bob Williford said is that, well, we thought the economy would be more open than it has been under Governor Cooper's restrictions. And because of that, we felt it might be more effective, have more impact if it rolled out more in the holiday season. What the interesting thing about that, though, is that the chamber already does that every year. It already does a shop and dine promotion in the holiday season. So unclear exactly, but because it was taxpayer money, to the tune of $13,500, it was an interesting story to update, we thought.
Yeah. I know they have been talking about doing that again, as we said, all throughout spring and summer, and then just kind of deciding. So interesting to see that it is still, I see a quote in here that the timeline for the program is still fluid, according to Bob Williford with the chamber. So
he's still fluid. And when Andrew interviewed him, he said holiday season or perhaps earlier. So stay tuned. We'll continue. Obviously, if it becomes highly visible all of a sudden and we see the campaign out there, we'll let everybody know that it has gotten out. Off the ground, and everyone should participate in that because certainly the idea is a great idea to really promote even more than has been happened so far, the Shop and Dine Henderson County for all the shops, not just downtown, but for all shops and restaurants all over the county.
Right. Absolutely. Let's move on to page two, Bill, and something that we've been talking about for a few weeks, and I have a feeling it's going to continue. We're going to continue talking about it, and that is the continuation of the water wars. The city asserts legal authority. Tell us this story, Bill.
Well, this is kind of the other shoe dropping of a story that, yes, indeed, as you mentioned, we have talked about a fair amount over the past, what, month? I think this vote was actually the day after Labor Day was the first public vote, although that was not the first time that Henderson County had blocked a city proposed or really a developer. It's usually a developer, of course, that's asking for the city water line extension, and it's the city that is notifying the county of the request and asking the county under this 1997 agreement, is that okay with y'all? We don't want to run city somewhere where y'all don't want development or where y'all didn't approve this zoning. So what the city has now done is gone back. This is good coverage again from Andrew of last Thursday night's city council meeting, describing how the city, according to Ms. John Connett, the city manager, went back, checked the minutes, checked the records, and really found, according to Mr. Connett, not much discussion and apparently no actual vote like might be done with a memorandum of understanding or a resolution to support this so-called water extension policy. There's some quotes here that John Connett says, we call it a policy, but I think the best way to characterize it is kind of an informal agreement that this is how this would happen. That is, this is how the county approval of a city water line extension outside the city boundaries would occur. So after the county commissioners blocked a couple of water line extensions we've talked about before, including one out to Horseshoe Farm for that vacation cabin development, and another one out to the 29-home subdivision proposed on Academy Road in Dana. After that happened in August and September, that's when the city said, well, we don't know how we're ever going to extend water if you're going to block them all. And they said, okay, from now on, we're going to change this this policy or this practice, and we'll just wait for y'all, Henderson County Board of Commissioners, to approve the zoning for a development. And once that's done, we're going to assume it's fine to run the water. We don't think you have the legal authority, basically, to block us from running water, from running the water line. So this really sets up, unless it gets resolved, which it presumably will somewhere down the road, this sets up an interesting conflict, you might say, between the city of Hendersonville and Henderson County as to how they'll manage and coordinate these waterline extensions. I think we talked about before, there's a lot at stake, not just the two I mentioned. You got the Taproot Dairy, among others, that Henderson County Board of Commissioners already approved that development of 700 homes. And presumably, if it's the county's position that it's going to block these water line extensions out into the county, then if that is blocked, then you got another big problem to somehow resolve.
Bill, boil this down for me for a little bit. Is the main crux of this disagreement between the city and the county that the county commissioners feel that folks who are not inside the city limits who are paying for city water are paying more for city water than folks inside the city limits? Is that ultimately the crux of it?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I should have gotten more to their their point of view. And what they've been saying is that they think the city council has not moved fast enough in terms of months and years in equalizing rates. That's exactly right. Okay. In city and out of city, out of city water users. That is, to be sure, one factor. Now, on the city side of that, they will say we have indeed, by resolution and by the budget, as you can see, and they can show you a spreadsheet that shows this and shows the rates that each would pay over the next 10 years. We have resolved to do that. It's in the resolution. It's in the budget out through 2030 to equalize rates to where rates would be equal in 2030. The county says a couple things. One, that's not fast enough. Two, basically, we don't trust you. Grady Hawkins famously likes to use the quote that it seems like whenever they're talking to the city about equalizing rates, it really turns out to be what he calls a 13th of never that it happens. Another thing recently that has gotten the attention of some water customers, probably some in the city as well, is this $5 a month stormwater fee that's on every water bill. And that was a kind of a new burr, you might say, under the saddle of the county commissioners to say, well, wait a minute. Why are county users paying a $5 a month stormwater fee? Because we, Henderson County, we have stormwater. We have stormwater regulations. We have a stormwater department in our county inspections department that taxpayers pay for. So that is that kind of been highlighted as well.
Okay.
And there really is the issue of who ultimately controls. Just not water line, not extension by extension, not water extension, not sewer extension, one by one, but who controls long-term in a master plan, comprehensive kind of way, water and sewer utility extensions in Henderson County. And I don't think they would deny, the Henderson County commissioners would deny, that they would really like more control. In our story a couple weeks ago, Grady Hawkins said what most commissioners have been saying for years, if not decades, and that is really a regional or at least a countywide water and sewer authority is the way to go. We would have county commissioners on it, or at least county commission appointed representatives. It would have city folks, town, village folks, and it would everybody would be in the room and would be planning it. But that's never gotten off the ground.
Thanks for clearing some of that up. And, of course, we'll, the lightning is going to continue spilling water on this story, I know, as it continues. Before we go to our break, Bill, let's stay on city council for a bit. We've got a couple of more stories in this week's lightning that we want to cover. And one of those things that we've been talking about recently, it's also on the cover on the front page of our website, is the community council conversations begin tonight.
Yes, they do. They start tonight. Thanks for mentioning that. We got them all listed here in bullets on page 3, Elected Leaders Host Council Conversations, starting tonight at 6 o'clock at Star of Bethel Church. That's at 105 North Whitted Street. That one is hosted by Mayor Pro Tem Jerry Smith. Jerry Smith, it's an outdoor meeting. Please bring a lawn chair if you'd like to sit and chat with the council member and staff members. Then continuing this coming Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning at the Hendersonville Farmers Market. That one hosted by Lindsay Simpson, also outside. Bring a lawn chair. And continuing on, you can see all the rest of them there over the next, looks like, 2 weeks, hosted by council member Jeff Miller, council member Jennifer Hensley, and an online Zoom opportunity hosted by Mayor Barbara Volk, ending. That'll be the last one on Thursday, October 29 at 6 o'clock at night.
All right. And once again, that's all listed in this week's Lightning. It's also, all of those are listed on the front page of our website, WTZQ.com as well. Staying on city council, a couple of another stories here before we go to our break. City council approves Chadwick Avenue rezoning, parking deck, and something called dark sky compliance. Talk to us about these things, Bill.
Yeah, both of those. The parking, what's notable about the parking deck is this was not, they've really not made the vote, the final vote to green light this thing, because they've gotten hung up on a budget cost overrun of about $1 million. It is really unresolved at this point. So a couple of this story reports how a couple of city residents said, again, were dubious about the parking deck and said, are the parking fees too high? Do we really need it? Is this going to be as pretty and as good as we'd like it to be, given that we don't have enough money, according to what the construction projections are at the moment? But as the city manager, Mr. Conant, told the council, which is right, it really right, as far as zoning, zoning is zoning and money is money, and one doesn't directly affect the other. They can rezone it and either build it or not build it. Just because you get the rezoning doesn't mean you're committed to build it. So that's where that stands at the moment. Dark sky compliance has been brought forth by Mr. Ralph Hammond Green in several council meetings over the past 6 months or longer. And he's a big proponent, as are others in town, of the dark sky initiative, which basically means lights shouldn't be brighter than they need to be, and they should point down to the road or the sidewalk or the parking lot or whatever it is you're trying to park. Trying to light in a useful way and not up into the sky, creating light pollution and making the stars and the moon less visible than we'd like them to be. And in neighborhoods, for instance, with streetlights, making people able to sleep better and not always have these real bright streetlights, you know, right over their bedroom windows or over their, you know, over their house.
So the dark sky compliance is specifically for the parking deck potentially, or is it?
I'm sorry. It's not connected to.
It's not connected to that at all. Okay.
It'd be street lights. It would be parking lot lights. It would be lights, just all the public lighting that
sure.
you see.
And billboard lights.
That was, again, more of a presentation with no action, but they kicked that can down the road a bit. But I'm sure it will come back in some form, and I assume the council will take it up and either said, yeah, we'll be dark sky compliant from here on, or they'll say, no, it's too expensive.
Okay. All right. Thank you for covering that for us. We'll be back. We're going to take our late break now. We had a lot to cover this morning, and we'll be back with Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss. We'll talk about things like losing a champion cedar tree, principal of the year, and Blue Ridge Mall pop-up holiday store winners. That's all coming up on Lightning Radio here on theCUBE.
Happy fall from Kaysen Oil Company. Fuel prices have dropped, so now is the time to get your oil before the cold weather is here. Schedule your delivery today by calling 693-0246. Family-owned and operated, Kaysen Oil Company, serving our community for over 40 years.
And we are back with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com with Lightning Radio. Bill, we've got a few more stories to squeeze in here before we finish. And let's start out with the story of this state champion incense cedar tree that that we're losing over in Flat Rock.
Have lost.
Have lost.
Okay, this goes back a ways. It goes back 40 years, 39, to 1981, when the North Carolina State Forest Service recognized the incense cedar tree at Saluda Cottages in Flat Rock as the North Carolina State Champion Incense Tree. And we should note that the house known as the Saluda Cottages is that, as we say, it's more mansion-like than what we think of as cottages, but that's
right.
The historic name. That's the historic name of the property. People know the big white building there, almost on the corner of Little River Road, just a little ways down, first one on your right that from Greenville Highway. Okay, so it was named the Incense Cedar of Champion of North Carolina, and measured at that time 106 feet high and 167 inches around, with a crown spread of 40 feet. This is according to historic Flat Rock. But as we see in this picture, it is towering, very precariously looking, over the house, and it had lived its life quite a long time, probably around 110 years or more.
Wow.
And it had to come down. So they sent a series of pictures. So we ran a couple. There's more online. You can check them out at HendersonvilleLightning.com. Had to take it down in the past few days or weeks. I'm not exactly sure when that was. And so it's no longer.
Wow, it's a shame. One would have thought, again, I'm not trying to armchair quarterback here, but one would have thought there would have been a way to help that tree grow a little straighter. Because you're right, the picture looks very precarious of the tree leaning over.
Yeah, It's not, there's nothing to say whether it was at some point storm damage or why the tree grew so crooked like that.
Yeah.
Over time, maybe it just got tired.
Yeah. Don't we all? Don't we all? Well, thank you for that story, Bill. Let's go on and touch on a few other things. Congratulations to Hendersonville Public Schools Principal of Henderson County Public Schools Principal of the Year, Mark Page. That was recently announced.
Yeah, and in a fun way, too. I have to credit Molly over at the Henderson County Public Schools Molly Gorsuch for her good account of this. And she sent a press release about how they awarded Mark Page the Principal of the Year. And in the top of the story explained, interestingly, how they got him. It says they usually try to make these things a surprise, and how they got him to the award. Looks like it's in the Atkinson Gym. And they told him he needed to go find a snake. And being a Boy Scout, the Page family has been very, very involved in the Daniel Boone Council of Boy Scouts. His father, the former school superintendent, Stephen Page, who's pictured here along with his wife, Patricia, a retired teacher people might also know, and Mark's wife, Maggie, and their children, Charles, William, and James. Anyway, back to the scouts and the snakes. he said, Mark Page explains, they sent me on a snake hunt. I was in the Boy Scouts, so whenever there's a snake on campus, they come get me. So they told him there was a snake on campus. They came, and so they fetched him, and he walked in, and there was school superintendent Bo Caldwell and the rest of the lower lots of the faculty, and a lot of people were Zooming it as well, watching it virtually. And so congratulations, Mark Page, Henderson County School Superintendent of the Year.
Or Principal. Yeah, Principal of the Year. Yeah, fantastic.
Principal of the Year, for sure.
Hey, Blue Ridge Mall is doing something kind of fun this year. They're taking some of their empty spaces and allowing some stores to do pop-up holiday stores, and they announced some winners. I guess they had a contest to see who would win those spaces, and you've got that story.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems kind of crafty. A lot of them are kind of crafty. They have they called it the Hendersonville's next great pop-up shop, and the merchants' shops were able to apply to be a pop-up shop in the mall. And the winners are Embroider Up, an online boutique offering customized handbags, luggage, and other items. The Fired Up Creative Lounge at Pottery Studio, the Four Seasons Christmas Garden Decor, and more, which is a downtown shop and now will pop up in the Blue Ridge Mall. And Merch on Main, a women's clothing boutique also in downtown Hendersonville, which now during the holidays will pop up at the Blue Ridge Mall.
Does it say in the story when to expect those pop-up stores to be open?
It says in the story, we don't know yet. Official opening dates will be announced soon, according to the mall, and the shops will operate throughout the holiday season.
Fantastic. Another congratulations out there is the Knights of Columbus honor first responders with their Shield Awards.
Yeah, this was a real nice story and a real nice picture showing the winners of the Shield Awards from the Knights of Columbus of Immaculate Conception Church. And those are Henderson County Fire and Rescue Captain Dave Jenkins, Sheriff Deputy Omar Jimenez Tweed, Hendersonville Police Officer Cameron Singleton, Hendersonville Firefighter Blake Redden, and paramedic Renee Griffin of the Henderson County Emergency Medical Services.
Well, fantastic. Well, very well-deserved awards for those guys. Bill, let's wrap it up this morning with a story on flu shots. It's this coming Saturday, I believe, through the health department, correct?
It is indeed. We wanted to give people a heads up on that, and they can read all about it on page 7. That is from 9 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday at the health department, which is at 1200 Spartanburg Highway. And one important thing I would note about that is that they want people to go to HendersonvilleLightning.com, especially go online where you can get a hot link for this, or go to Henderson County Health Department website and print out these consent forms or these forms in advance. They want you to print those out.
Okay.
And fill those out and have those filled out to keep the line moving and to keep that quick and efficient. So it's a good idea to get that. I think they'll either ask you for an insurance card and I guess pay for it that way. And they say the uninsured get a flu shot for free.
Wow. Fantastic. All right, Bill, thank you so much. That is, of course, in this week's Lightning and also on HendersonvilleLightning.com. And remember to download and print out that form in advance so you can keep the line moving for the flu shots this coming Saturday. Bill, we've covered a lot. There's still plenty more in this week's Lightning, which is on the streets and in your mailboxes. And if it's not in your mailbox, tell people how they can pick up their copy of this week's Lightning.
Well, by getting a single copy at any of the Lightning Orange racks around the county or at the dealer partners like coffee shops, convenience stores, or the public supermarket for one, or by going to HendersonvilleLightning.com, and click on subscribe, which will walk you through how to join the growing legions of Lightning fans and get their Lightning today, Lightning Thursday, or by calling Jan at 698-0407.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.